This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door, including my favourite, the quarter pounder with cheese. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get reward points delivered too. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See McDonald's.com.
Hello everybody and welcome to episode number 284 of the Stacey West podcast. My name, of course, is Chris, a relatively familiar voice, I think, but I haven't been that familiar recently. I've been poorly. Joining me today is my good friend Charlie Beeston, who has been pretty much a full-time broadcaster for the last couple of weeks. So you've got myself and Charlie today because Ben, it's his birthday. Happy birthday, Ben. And Gary is away on his honeymoon. So you're going to have to put up with myself and Charlie today. Mr. Beeston, how you doing?
I am very well. I feel like I've done quite a few in a row at the minute through you obviously not feeling too well and Gaz being away and such. And I'll be honest, I'm loving every single second of it. We both do the Real EFL podcast from time to time as well, don't we, Chris? And I'm doing the League One podcast later. And I'm actually recording that for those that listen to the pod on Thursday or look to the preview. I'm actually doing that podcast hosted by Matt Isles, who is the Bristol Rovers fan. And again, I'm rather looking forward to that. 2 weeks in a row where I'm going to be going onto a League One podcast and talking about Lincoln scoring 5. I mean, let's be honest, if we'd have said that a couple of months ago, we'd be laughed out of the room. Chris, it's a good time to be a Lincoln fan, isn't it?
Oh, it's a wonderful time to be a Lincoln City supporter. It's almost like pinch yourself moments at the moment, isn't it? It's just an absolute pleasure. And I don't think I've ever seen us be this good. Genuinely, I know it's... No. And it's not just the last three games. The last three games are going to get the headlines. It's the icing on the cake, isn't it? But it's been coming for a while. I'd say it's arguably ever since Michael Skubala's been in the building. But really, for me, the catalyst of it all was that week and a half we had between the Blackpool and Wickham game. That was when we first started to see just the signs of us getting better. And from then, it's just been non-stop and it's been brilliant. But what's really funny is the last time I was on this, I think, was after the Shrewsbury game, or it might have been after Stevenage. I think it was after Stevenage, actually. But we were mentioning about, we were saying on the podcast, I think in the fan base, just generally, someone's going to get a battering from us at some point. It's brewing. And then we beat Shrewsbury 3-0, could have been 6. And we thought, well, that was the battering. And it was brilliant. We came out of that game thinking, that was just such a brilliant game to witness. And it felt like we was in full flow, albeit against a poor Shrewsbury side. And then since then, we've won 5-1, 6-0, and 5-0. Like, oh, so actually, Shrewsbury was, that's just by the by. That's now just par for the course, I think, beating a team like 3-0. It's now 5s and 6s only, thank you very much.
It's funny because going into yesterday's match, you kind of stood around the fan zone and we were still having a drink because we'd been at a fan advisory board meeting quite early, which, again, you want to be down and involved in everything at the ground at the minute and just talking to everybody because we sat there in a meeting and you just want to talk about the football. And that's very much what the feeling is. But we were stood around having a pint again on the podcast on Thursday night as well. There was kind of a little jokey, we'll be able to get another 5 goals against Bristol Road. Hey, we might make it 7 this time. We've gone 5, 6, 7 here. But nobody actually believed it. It was more just sort of a, a little bit of a joke and a bit of a pipe dream. But it's happened again. We've got another five. And let's be honest, playoffs at one point were a pipe dream. Playoffs at one point were written off by you, Chris.
Basically. Yeah, just a couple of weeks ago.
I came back to Nottingham this morning. I'd had a few days in Lincoln last week and came back to Nottingham this morning and was talking to my flatmate. And he goes, so, you know, do you actually think you've got a chance of making the playoffs? And I go, well, how can I say no after these last three, not just results, because the results are absolutely astonishing. And when you look back at it in a good few years' time, you'll see a 5-1 against Barnsley, a 6-0, a 5-0, and you'll see all these goals and what an amazing run of results it is and all that. But then at the same time, it's the performances that it just seem to be getting better and better each game. Somehow, I never thought we'd be able to top that 3-0 against Shrewsbury, like you, Chris, because I thought that was going to be the pinnacle, if you like, of this Michael Skibala style for the rest of this season. We'll have that big win. We'll get a few more good results. But that was probably the game that we'll look back on. Okay, Stevenage, 0-0 draw. Okay, yeah, it was a tough game against a tough opposition. Then we go and beat Barnsley 5-1. And that's like, all right, well, that will now never be forgotten. That will be the game that in however many years' time you'll look back on and think, wow, I was there sort of thing or whatever. Then we beat Cambridge 6-0 Tuesday night. Now we've beaten Bristol Rovers 5-0. Suddenly, we're not talking about individual games anymore. We're talking about the week. We're talking about the month. We're talking about the second half of the season. How long ago does December feel? I mean, we've scored 16 goals in 3 matches. Earlier on in the season, I think it felt like we were taking 16 games to score 3 goals. And it is totally flipped on its head. And you sort of sat there thinking, you know, we kind of remarked actually in the group chat, didn't we, Chris, just before coming on to here. We sort of thought that this was coming. We could see what the issues were back in, let's say, December, because I think that's probably the biggest contrast in terms of months to now. And back in December, we were like, look, we know what the issues are. We know we've got the injuries. Michael Skibala is going to want time on the training pitch and all of this, loads of factors. And it's picked up, and we knew it would pick up. But my God, we never thought it would pick up this much. This is probably the best footballing side I've ever seen at Cinsault Bank.
Yeah, me too. Best Lincoln City team in my lifetime. And to say that so soon after us being on a real tough run, you know, like as you said, understandably tough. There were some lots of reasons for that. I remember us discussing on our monthly YouTube show and on various podcasts, almost like defending it. And that wasn't us being like just super pro club. I think we just saw that the building blocks are being put in place, but there's no denying that the results were challenging. But I think because of the fact that we could see that there was an alignment at the club and that we could see that there was a plan in place, I think as you said there, we could see that it was going to get better. I think we all were, I'll be honest, pretty expectant that it was going to improve, but not in my wildest dreams that I expect it to improve to this level so quickly. Like, it's just superb. But going into this game, as you say, yeah, jokey, let's just score 7 this time, let's get another big win. I really didn't think that was going to be the case. No. I was confident we could get a positive result. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was going to be a real tough one. I thought it was going to be a tight game, this one. I think, you know, you can't score that many goals. It can't be that simple 3 games in a row. And it wasn't simple, by the way. Yeah, obviously we were wrong. But I was going into this not worrying. I was comfortable, like quietly confident, because you can't not be confident in this team at the moment. But obviously expecting a very, very different sort of challenge to Cambridge and Barnsley. They're 3 different sides altogether. All 3 of them are at different parts of the table as well. And sometimes it's more difficult playing against those teams that are mid-table that definitely aren't going down, really aren't going up either, and they haven't got a huge amount to play for. So sometimes those teams can play with a bit of freedom at this time of the season that you don't normally get when the pressure's really on. So for those reasons, I was going into this feeling just conscious, really, just conscious of the fact it's going to be a tough one. It's going to be more like a normal football match, not a fairy tale that the last couple of games have been. Normally you and I, when we're in the fan zone, we are on it, bang on to 2 o'clock on the dot. We're normally like there looking at the team sheet.
Yeah.
It wasn't until 2:10 that we realised that the team sheet was out, because I think most of us are pretty comfortable with how the team's doing. We don't need to analyse it in too much depth. Mm. But there was only really one big difference, wasn't there? And that was Jovan replacing Ben House. Ben House, of course, missed this game. We're not really exactly sure how long he's going to be out for, I don't think. From the messaging that we're getting from Skibala, it isn't confirmed, but I don't think it's like really long, but we don't know. But ultimately, let's just talk about this one game. Glenn House wasn't in the squad. Freddie was back on the bench, but Jovan got the nod to get a start, which I was actually really pleased by. And everyone knows how big of a fan of Freddie Draper I am. But Jovan deserved to play. He was brilliant when he came on Tuesday night for Ben House. And we'll touch about this later, I'm sure. But I thought Jovan was superb yesterday. Absolutely superb. But that was the only real change. So, of course, last up with Big Lucas Jensen in goal. Back three of Sean Rowan, Porgio Collar and Alex Mitchell. Ethan Arahan with Jack Moylan, who is undroppable at the moment. And Danny Mondreuil, to be honest, who was also undroppable, who has made that central midfield position that I thought was Ted Bishop's own. He's made that his own now, and fair play to him, because I really didn't think Danny Mondreuil had the attributes to play that role. I thought he'd be effective further up the pitch, but you know, I love being wrong in this regard, because he's been absolutely outstanding since he played in there. So he kept his, and rightly kept his position. And then, of course, the wing-backs of Lass and Rico with Joe Taylor and, as mentioned, Jovan Mukama up top. So what were your thoughts on the lineup?
So I'll be honest, Thursday night's pod, I predicted that it would be Jovan getting the start on Saturday. And to be fair, I actually said that I wanted him to get the start for two reasons. A, because he did well enough on Tuesday night that I thought he deserved to have a start. And let's be honest, Tuesday night was effectively a start. He played 60, 70 minutes, wasn't it, because of Ben House's injury. So that was more or less what he would have got if he started. And also it meant that we didn't have to rush back Freddie Draper. You know, there's no need to risk aggravating an injury for me when we've now got a two-week break, almost a two-week break, a 13-day break afterwards. So in that kind of position, I thought, let's start Jovan, let's give him a run out. And, you know, similarly to you, I thought he was absolutely outstanding. I remarked in the write-up today that he had a lot of stick earlier on in the season, and I felt really, really bad for Jovan. And there were times when I came on the podcast and I said, unfortunately, he's not really been good enough. But we knew why. He was thrown into the deep end, thrust into leading a League One team's line on his own, by the way, not in a dual striker formation, which, I mean, it's pretty clear at the minute that that's probably his best, you know, one of the best roles for him as well. But he's been thrust into this position, and there were some games where he struggled. Not all games, though, because there were also some games where I thought he performed quite well. And there were some games where he was told to maybe not do the same things as what maybe a Ben House would have done if he was on the pitch, those sorts of things. So I felt a lot of the stick towards him was maybe a little bit harsh, but I could understand some of it from certain points of view. But recently, Jovan has been an invaluable member of the squad. And that is exactly what you want from one of your academy lads. Like, we talk about squad depth all the time, and you talk about players replacing other players and not noticing that they're not there and all of this. And I think that's one of the things with Jovan. I mean, we said it off air, didn't we? That Ben House, we didn't miss Ben House yesterday because of what Jovan was able to do. He may not have got a goal, and he may not have got an assist, even though he probably should have had one, considering that effort came off the bar. But he was absolutely outstanding at everything that he was clearly being asked to do. You could understand what his role was in the game yesterday, and he executed it to more or less perfection. So huge credit to a young academy lad that had to deal with massive pressure in the first half of this season. He's come out the other side of that. Many thought, myself included, that he'd probably be on loan by this point, but because of certain injuries and such, and also because of the fact that he's been able to step up, we've wanted him around the squad. I've been really impressed with him, and long may it continue.
Yeah, nothing to add. Just yes, I agree with you. I agree in the fact that I think playing in a two helps, because what I've been most impressed with him with recently, yesterday particularly, his the aggressiveness in his press, like he's nailed that. He's improved in that. But I think his link-up play has been great. I think it's often overlooked, because it's often like back to goal. It's like a little just one touch layoff, but it keeps the move flowing. And I've been really impressed with his link-up play. I think he's been he's like a real team player up front. You know, you can associate centre forward with goals like Joe Taylor, for example, like finishing him off. I don't think that's Jovan's game. His game is to be that link-up player, and he's been really good at it. And I think the biggest credit you can give Jovan yesterday is that we genuinely didn't miss Ben House yesterday, I don't think. And I think that, of course, we'd love to have Ben in the team. There's no denying that that's the case. But the fact that Jovan performed so well, that he performed just as well as Ben would have done, in my opinion. I think, you know, I think that's credit where it's due. But we're getting ahead of ourselves, of course. But I think we think both of us wanted to make sure we mentioned Jovan, didn't we? Because there's lots to talk about today. And we wanted to make sure that we kind of got that in. So let's start at the start, shall we?
I just wanted to put one more thing up on the lineup, by the way. Because,
okay, sorry, go on.
And it's another praise to the team. I know it's funny that we're praising the team a lot at the minute. Wonder why. But Adam Jackson on the bench again. Cannot get in that starting 11. Now, we do on our monthly show, we do our best 11s and such of the players that are available. And we both actually had Jacko in, even though he had been out for a couple of games up to that point. But we had to have him in because we thought Jacko is just so good that you want him to be playing. But then you look at how well, not just yesterday, but beforehand, what Alex Mitchell and what Paulie O'Connor are doing week in, week out, and Sean Rowan as well. Let's make sure he gets the lovers up back. For me, his position is very much cemented in that left-sided centre-half position. But Adam Jackson, who has been one of, if not the player of the season, he's been up there for consistency throughout the whole year, and he now can't really get enough of a look in. And you feel bad for him, but you don't want to change your winning formula.
No, I agree. I've been so impressed with the back three. I've been impressed with the back three, whoever's been in it, for the majority of the season. So it's like we say it all the time. But you know what? We mentioned Alex Mitchell before, and I think both you and I are really big fans of Alex. But I think we don't maybe give Pordy the credit that he deserves, because Pordy has filled in at the left and right side and of the three. I think his maybe most comfortable position is central, but he's capable of playing either side. And when Jacko and Pordy have both been in the team and one of the other two have been missing out, Pordy's obviously been the one that's been shifted out to the outsides of the three. But he's had a run of games now playing at central of the three. And he's just so commanding. He's a very different style, I think, than Jacko. Jacko's probably a little bit more calming influence. Not that Pordy isn't composed, but I think Jacko kind of just settles everything down more. But Pordy's just so dominant. So it's difficult for Jacko to get in the team, but that's what you want. You want genuine competition for places, and that's what we have a lot around the pitch at the moment, which is great.
No, absolutely. It's so nice when you are there and you're thinking of, let's say, the midfield where or the attack, where there are times where we are struggling in terms of bodies in certain parts of this season. And there have been times where we've had defenders that are injured. But every single defender, no matter what position, no matter what role they're being asked to play, has been top draw. TJ Oma, like, we're talking about defenders that are missing out and can't really get into the squad. And I mentioned Adam Jackson there, but TJ has hardly played any minutes recently. But in November and December, when we were really struggling, he was one of our best players. And he thrived under Michael Skubala's ball. And he probably still could if he was playing week in, week out at the minute. But again, can't get a look in the squad because of how well everybody else is doing. So it is a really, really lovely position to be in. But what else was a lovely position to be in was our seats yesterday at 3 o'clock.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a real recurring theme now of Lincoln City starting games really quickly. And once again, it transpired yesterday. It was a really strong start to the game, real high-intensity start, which is something that's just synonymous with us these days. It's brilliant to see. And then 11 minutes on the clock, 1-0 to Lincoln. It all actually started from ball down the line. And their centre-half, Taylor, was being put under quite a lot of pressure from Jovan McCarm. Really good kind of aggressive pressure really on. A poor back pass and the goalkeeper being wrong-footed almost ended up as an own goal, but it hit the side netting. Like, so that is a mistake. It's a mistake. But I would say it's a partly forced error. You know, if Jovan isn't chasing down quite as aggressively as he is, there's not as much pressure on that back pass then. Don't get me wrong, the defender should and the keeper should deal with that all day long, but they didn't. Corner. Brilliant. That's a great start to the game. We've got early pressure. Corner comes in, headed back for another corner. Comes in, Pordy O'Connor, free header, 1-0, we're up and running. And that's, you know, for me thinking, this is going to be a bit of a tighter one, this one. And then 11 minutes in, brilliant, there we go, 1-0, fantastic.
Danny Mandroyo assist as well, so happy St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, indeed, yes, indeed. So just to touch on kind of early goals, because that's a real, real fixture of our team at the moment. So against Port Vale, we scored after 2 minutes. Shrewsbury 6 minutes, Barnsley 15, Cambridge 3, and now Bristol Rovers in 11. So in the first, we've scored a goal in the first 15 minutes of each of our last 5 wins. And that's, you know, once you go a goal up, you're asking questions of the opposition. Like, you were taking the game to the opposition, so that's great. Now, one thing I do want to touch on before we discuss the rest of the game is, of course, expected goals. Because the XG for the game was really interesting. I know people that listen thinking, it can't be, Chris. It can't be. It is. I promise you it is. So we actually almost had identical expected goals for the game. Now, of course, they had a penalty that was missed, which was guaranteed like 0.78, I think. 0.76, actually. So that'll be a big part of theirs. But we had 2.17, I think. Yeah, and they had 2.14. Now, they had a really big chance. They had a really big chance at 1-0. That chance generated an XG of 0.49. So, on the counter-attack, really clever reverse pass, actually, by Bristol Rovers. I think it was Giovanni Brown. Reverse pass through to Chris Martin. 15-goal Chris Martin this season, by the way. He's got more than a goal every 2 games. Was left one-on-one with Lucas Jensen. That is an absolutely superb save by Lucas Jensen. A really massive save at a really important part of the game. One-on-one, brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And then, of course, we score a couple of goals after that. We're going to touch on those in a bit of depth. So Bristol Rovers had that 0.49 XG for that one chance, which big chance, like I said, really significant. But they didn't have any XG at all until they were 3-0 down after that. And it's pretty easy to play with the shackles off, with a bit of freedom, when you're 3-0 down and there's no pressure. Yeah. So I think, yeah, looking at it on paper, looking at just the XG, like, oh, actually, it must have been quite a tight game then in certain regards. Like, yeah, on, you know, to the overall balance, but game state had a huge part to play. So I think number one was just the significance of that save from Jensen, firstly. And then just a matter of moments later, on 19 minutes, Joe Taylor makes it 2-0. And this was a really, really good goal, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was an absolutely perfect move, this one. Perfection was the word of the day on Thursday's podcast. Again, easy when we win 6-0. And I don't think yesterday was quite perfect because, you know, we kept the clean sheet, but we did give away a red card. We did give away a penalty. So I can't really say that yesterday was perfect. But this goal absolutely was perfect. It was Rico Hackett intercepting the ball on the left flank when Bristol Rovers are trying to move the ball forward. And 4 passes later, the ball was in the back of the net. Now, the cross from Lars Sorensen for this goal, absolutely sublime. It was honestly perfect. And Joe Taylor beat it. I mean, the goalkeeper has to do better there, as far as I'm concerned. I'm sorry, the goalkeeper was awful for that. But the fact that Joe Taylor is able to get in front of him, diving header, ball in the back of the net, just boom. That is exactly what you want from, not really a counter-attack because they didn't even get in our half, but from breaking up their transitional play, taking that interception, then moving the ball with 4 passes into the back of the net. Perfect.
Yeah, I'm going to back up their keeper. He wasn't great yesterday. You're not blaming the keeper for that, by the way. That's centre-half's job all day long. I think what really impressed me here more than anything, and it's a recurring theme, as you mentioned, Hackett there picking up the ball, but Hackett intercepted the pass, which was misplaced because of really intense press and pressure from Joe Taylor tracking the centre midfielder, Sam Finley. He then misplaced his pass. Rico then, of course, moved the ball forward and then mentioned that good play forward there. Absolutely perfect cross from Lass. Mm-hmm. And then Joe Taylor, he cleverly positioned himself between the 2 centre halves. So this Jovan was being occupied by the first centre back. He was almost used as a bit of almost like a decoy. And then Joe Taylor was then positioned between the 2 centre halves. So I think the centre half that would be marking Joe is probably a little bit conscious that if he gets dragged too close to his teammate, then he's got no space to manoeuvre then. And then he's got space behind him. It's just clever positioning, but he's just done well to get in front of it. I don't think the keeper can do a lot about that one. There's other things he could have.
Yeah,
I think that's a centre back's mistake, but also just really good positioning by Joe because he times his run well. And then it's 2-0, and it's not game over, not by a long shot, because Bristol Rovers have had a good on the ball. But obviously, with the run we've been on, you're super confident there because they've had their big chance just 3 or 4 minutes before that. And then we take ours. And that's something that I think we're doing really well now. Like I said, it always goes without saying, obviously, scoring the amount of goals we are, but we are just being ruthless in taking the opportunities when they arrived. Because, and that's something that, you know, we are, of course, creating more chances now than we weren't before earlier in the season. But we weren't creating nothing earlier in the season, but we just weren't taking the chances. And now we are both creating a higher volume of chances, higher quality chances, and we are sticking them away as well. So that was then 2-0. And then just 3 minutes later, it's three. And this comes on the back of some real sustained pressure by us, just not allowing Bristol Rovers to get out. You mentioned Irahan earlier, like a really clever little nick, but that was on the back of, you know, a little two other kind of sustained attacks, and we just didn't allow Bristol Rovers to get out. At the point that we started the attack that caused the third goal, the only player at all that was in the Lincoln City half was Lucas Jensen. Even Pauly, the central centre back, was in the opposition half in the kind of the centre circle. Both two centre halves, outside centre halves, are really wide, and Bristol Rovers were camped in. They could not get out. They couldn't get out. And normally, you know, when you come against teams like that that are camped in and you can't play through them, that was probably something that we really struggled to break down earlier in the season. And yeah, just with ease. So really, really good play from Irahan to win the ball back. Knocks the ball into, I think he said Moylan, wasn't it? He then lays it into Jovan, who used his body, really good strength on Jovan to hold off the defender. Really good, powerful shot and good save for the keeper to get something on it. Spoons up off the bar into the six-yard area. And then somehow Joe Taylor outjumps both centre-halves to make it 3-0. I think that's like you'd expect the centre-halves to deal with that. Yeah. But again, the sustained pressure, and it's not just the physical effort, it's the psychological kind of effort that requires from a defensive perspective. Like, it's so hard to deal with when you just can't get out. You're just like under pressure. You're like, it's just so much... it's just really bloody hard work. So, you know, when there's then... You got to go up for a header and you don't want to kind of get in your teammates' way on the edge of the six-yard box. And then there's a centre forward, really a nuisance of a centre forward that Joe Taylor is. It's a defensive mix-up and Joe capitalises as he always does. At that point, 3-0. In my mind, that is then game over in terms of, you know, are we going to win now? What the end result's going to be, we have no idea. At that point, you could go on and go, my God, this could be a silly score again. But it's absolutely brilliant at 3-0. But there's no denying that from that point, Bristol Rovers did have a spell. They, from us going 3-0 up on 25 minutes, they made a couple of substitutions, which is a compliment in itself, isn't it? That he's forcing the opposition to make two tactical changes after just 25 minutes. They changed shape and they had a bit of a spell then. And then that's when we really needed Lucas Jensen and some other defenders to... Not to get us out of jail, because a couple of those were routine. there's no denying that in that spell between sort of 30 and 45 minutes that Bristol Rovers, that was their best spell of the game. That's when they had their highest XG. That's when they had their most shots on target, their most touches in the box. They, I think, in terms of the stats, they probably deserved a goal at that part of the game. But as we said earlier, it's very, very easy to play with freedom when you're 3-0 down and there's no pressure on you. Michael Skubala said in his post-match interview, yeah, they had a spell just before half-time after their change of shape. We sorted a few things out tactically at half-time and then we were fine. But there's no denying that in that sort of 15, 20-minute spell before half-time, Bristol Rovers definitely had their best spell of the game.
They did. And for that, huge credit has to go to Lucas Jensen, as you said. And I want to pick up on something. If anything, I want to apologise to Lucas Jensen. And I think you all probably know where this one's going, Chris.
I do, yes.
On social media on Tuesday, I think it was with Andy Pearson, actually, on Twitter. And I basically remarked that even I could go in goal at the minute and we'd still find a way to win. Not as an insult to Lucas Jensen, by the way, but just as an absolute compliment to the rest of the team and just how good we were. And I mentioned it in the fan advisory board meeting yesterday when we were kind of talking about the football, didn't I? And Liam sort of turned around and went, oh, I'll tell Lucas you said that then, sort of thing. And after the game, I just had to immediately put a message into the fan advisory board group chat, apologising, saying I was wrong. Lucas, somehow, like I say, somehow, we've scored five. And we've been outstanding to a man again. And yet Lucas Jensen, for me, was man of the match.
Yeah, he got given run of the match, didn't he? By the whoever nominated man of the match in the stadium. And I think rightly so. Because he made some big saves. The one at 1-0 was the big, big, big one. But also, football's a game of momentum, isn't it? And we're all confident at the moment. If we do concede a goal before half-time, it's 3-1 then. It's not quite so dominant. The momentum just shifts a little bit. They did have a spell. You know, so they can then come out second half and continue that spell. Then you're in for a little bit of a challenging second half where, you know, they've got to kind of throw the kitchen sink at it a little bit. But for us to kind of go in at half-time with the clean sheet intact, and that was hugely down to Lucas Jensen making some really, really important saves. He's had a really big role to play, which allows us then to then attack the second half, the beginning of the second half, so intensely, just like we started to get the first half in. But I think Lucas allowed that by making sure that we went in and with a clean sheet at halftime and didn't concede in that last 15 minutes when they had their only real spell in the game. And then, of course, the second half kicked off. Oh, no, there's one other big talking point, of course, just before halftime. Because Mr. Arahan got himself a yellow card for kicking the ball away. Now, I'm going to ask you what your opinion is on this whole, just this part of the scenario first. We're going to touch on the second yellow later. But just this standalone incident, what's your opinion?
Now, I did the Ref Watch article this week for the Stacey West site to kind of look over who this referee was. He gives a lot of yellows. He blows up a lot. He is one of the sort of most prominent for that. And therefore, I wasn't surprised that he gave a yellow for something so silly. But that also doesn't mean that I don't think it was harsh. It's one of those really difficult ones because it's all about perspective. And it's very difficult to judge, I think, that from a fan's point of view sat in the stands. Player kicking the ball away, he didn't boot it out of anger. He didn't boot it out of annoyance or petulance or whatever. Just tried to play the ball to Joe Taylor. He just tried to make a pass. Had the whistle already gone? Yeah, maybe. But it wasn't... It was harsh, but I also wasn't too surprised. And it also shouldn't have really made too much of a difference in the grand scheme of things, but obviously it did, as we'll go on to later.
Yeah, no, I actually missed this in real time. I'd gone to the toilet. I always need to go to the toilet at some point in the first half. it's inevitable, especially after I had a first pint for weeks and weeks and weeks. So the Joe who I sit next to, I came back and I asked if I missed anything. He says, "Oh, yeah, Aran got a silly yellow card for kicking the ball away." And I just took his word for it. And then I've only since kind of watching this back. And I'm with you. I think it's, you know, you kind of, as Lincoln City supporters, would probably have rose tinted glasses at times. I know I'm definitely guilty of that. I think we all are. Or you're kind of the other way. And because of that, you're almost like, because you want the best for the club, you're almost like super critical and super analytical. And I think it's somewhere, it's healthy to try and find that balance. And I think it's in that middle on the fence where this sits in this particular instance. So I timed it. I got my stopwatch out and I timed exactly how long it was from the point that the whistle went until Arahan actually kicked the ball. And it was a pass. It passed the ball to Joe Taylor. It wasn't a kicking the ball away. And it was 0.96 seconds. Just less than a second. Less than a second passed, and who was I talking to? Someone mentioned yesterday, it might have been Pete or Dave, not sure. Someone mentioned yesterday that reminded them, and it was a good point, reminded them of many years ago in the Champions League, Robin van Persie kicking the ball away and getting sent off in the Nou Camp. And that was under a second from the point of the referee's whistle.
Was that when he took a shot?
I think he shot, yeah.
It was a shot, wasn't it? Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah.
Anyway, and he got a second yellow card for that, got sent off. Ridiculous. Yeah. And it kind of reminded him of that. And I think, you know, like, I've played the game, you know, like most people listening will have played the game. Honestly, like, if you're Ethan Arahan in that situation, you want to slow the game down, you know you've handled the ball, and the referee blows, you think, oh, if I get a little nudge on this now, like it's he's not going to give me a yellow for this because it's like I say, less than a second. It's literally my very next touch. He passes the ball. You know that it's a free kick and you should drop it. But at the same time, you know that 99% of the time you're going to get away with that. It's not. So, I think, is it silly and an unnecessary yellow card to receive? Yeah, but that's part of the game to try and get those little kind of marginal gains in that regard. But should he have done it? No, obviously. And do I think he knew what he was doing? Yeah, but from when Joe said it was a really silly kick away, and then the image I had in my head compared to watching it back and the reality of seeing it wasn't the same thing at all. Like he's gone to pass it to Taylor. Question number one, was it a bit unnecessary? Yes. But question number two, does that mean it was unlucky? It wasn't unlucky. No, it was still really unlucky to get that yellow card. As you said, it shouldn't have mattered, but it does, you know, when you're in that ball winning deep lying midfielder role, you're generally going to be subject and part of a lot of duels. And just by sheer volume of taking part in that many duels, you're going to pick up cards. So it does limit your ability to then have to engage quite so aggressively in the second half. Yeah. So for that reason, was it unnecessary? Yes. But I think he was a little bit unlucky. I do.
I agree with that whole sentiment. But going into halftime, there was, again, just... It's a really weird pinch-me feeling. Now, I actually compare it back, and it's weird because we're 3-0 up, so I shouldn't compare it back to this, but it reminded me a little bit of the halftime at Barnsley, where we're 1-0 up, but there was a good bit of pressure from the opposition, and still had hope in that we'd go on and win the second half. And to be honest, at 3-0, I just sort of thought that like they can have pressure, but we've only conceded 3 twice this season. That was against Bolton on the opening day. Opening day doesn't really count, does it? And they against Derby when we were on an absolute bare bones squad on the Thursday night before Christmas. So again, I really wasn't that worried. And especially when you've got Lucas Jensen in goal and the defence that we have.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door, including my favourite, the quarter pounder with cheese. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get reward points delivered too. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18+. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Then going into the second half, we wanted to just make sure that we started again reasonably quickly. And I actually thought for the first 5 minutes it was Bristol Rovers. They didn't necessarily have too many chances, but I thought they came out of the tunnel looking like they had a little bit of fight in them. And, you know, that was fair enough until 55th minute. And that was immediately taken away from them, wasn't it, Chris?
It was, yeah. I think Bristol Rovers came out with a little bit of intensity, but not a great deal of kind of connectivity with each other. It was the definition of you've had a bollocking at half time from the gaffer. You want to look like you're working hard, but it wasn't like a coherent kind of high intensity style of football. It was players putting a shift in to look busy, in my opinion. I thought they were poor, actually, in the second half. And it's a definition of being good or just working hard. And, you know, and we should defend this under Mark Kennedy, in fairness. So I remember the amount of times that we used to let the centre-backs have the ball, like the opposition centre-backs, we never used to press them really, really hard. We used to be a mid-block team. Mm. And the amount of times that you kind of think, oh, so-and-so is lazy. And we're like, no, he's not lazy. He's just blocking off the pass. And then there will be a particular trigger when it goes to a certain point. Then we press really intensely. And it's sometimes like, it's one of my kind of pet hates, I suppose, is like, and it's more of like from like a managing team and when you're coaching players, is when they're showing a desire to work hard, but you're working hard in the wrong way. Because if you go and charge on your own and press the centre back, for example, but you're the only player doing it, then, and there's three of them, it's an easy pass around you, then you've got a player the wrong side of the ball and they've got an overload. Like, it has to be coherent. So for me, Bristol Rovers showed a bit of desire and heart and fight and to start in the first 5 minutes, but nothing that was particularly really coherent. You know, and that's something that is just so ingrained in us now. And that's what I'm most impressed with. Take the goal, even take the goals away. You know, it's not just about pressing for pressing's sake, but it's just how automatic it is now. It's just our identity now. You know, it's just what we do. As Scubala said after the game in his press conference, well, that's just us now. That's just us. That's how we are. You know, we're at that point now. We have an identity. We know what we are. And our lads have really bought into it. And credit to everybody. Credit to the coaching team to instill it. But also credit to the players for being coachable and receptive of that and willing to put it in. So it is now just automatic. Because you never, ever see us pressing just as one player on its own. It's so coherent. Anyway, that's a bit of a side note. But yeah, I thought Bristol Rovers came out with a bit of fight, but not anything particularly threatening. And then, 55 minutes in, worked out to the right side, Lasse Sorensen, really clever, positive run inside. You know, really difficult to track that is when, you know, it's a wing back. It's not like a winger with an overlapping fullback. He is the wide player. Drives inside. It makes it so difficult to challenge because it's not like a definite marker then, because you go drag someone out of position. And then a perfectly weighted through ball to Joe Taylor with what is clearly a trademark finish of his now, a little dink across the goalkeeper. It's exactly how you should finish from that angle. It's just so difficult to deal with as a goalkeeper, but he's got it down to a T. 3-0, Joe Taylor's... 4-0, sorry. Joe Taylor's first career hat-trick rightly will take the plaudits. But I think both you and I want to make sure that we're mentioning a certain Mr. Sorensen here. Two assists in this game and two superb assists. So the cross for the first one, a perfect ball in. And it was, like, it was perfect. And then that second one, really, really positive run inside and then a perfectly weighted pass to find Joe Taylor. Last, Sorensen. He's so good. He's so good. I know you wanted to mention, I've got some numbers here, so I'll let you have your piece on Lasse and the goal itself, and then we'll touch on the numbers a little bit as well.
Well, I'll start with a goal, because it was just... Obviously, the assist, I'm going to wax lyrical about in a second, because I'm going to wax lyrical about Lasse Sorensen. But the finish, to have sort of that level of confidence, just have that cheeky little chip over the goalkeeper... To have the intelligence of the ball coming to you there with a perfectly timed and weighted through ball, to then think, right, I can chip him here if he takes one step towards me. And to do that in the area like that, absolutely fantastic from Joe Taylor. And he deserved the hat trick. And, you know, it kind of feels like a hat trick has been coming from one of our lads over the past few match days, obviously. And, you know, Joe Taylor... Now our top goal scorer with 8 goals. We'll talk about Joe Taylor in a little bit, won't we? But I also just want to pick up on, like I said, that the fact it was a hat trick. First of all, do you know what our last hat trick was, Chris?
Oh, good question.
In fact, when was our last hat trick? Full stop.
I'm rubbish at these. Just okay. Tell me.
Okay, so our last hat trick, full stop, I believe, was Jack Diamond away at Bristol Rovers.
Ah, of course, yeah.
Two of them penalties, if I remember correctly. That was in the 6-3. Our last hat trick at home in all competitions, I think, was Anthony Scully in the Papa John's Trophy against Man U under-21s. And then in the league, I actually think it was Brennan Johnson with no fans in when he shouldn't have actually been on the pitch against MK Dons.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. So I believe that was our last home league hat trick. And so to think we've not had a hat trick under Kennedy or Scubala yet until yesterday. And like I say, it's been looming because we've had a few braces recently from Joe Taylor and Jack Boyle and such. I'm really, really pleased for Joe Taylor. But before we even talk about him, last bloody Sorensen. Just, It's so easy to wax lyrical about Lass because you can fall into this trap of forgetting the football and just falling in love with what Lass represents as a person, because he is a fantastic person and a fantastic community asset to the club, if we're going to be blunt about it. He's perfect for the clubs. I mean, the club's media and commercial guys must absolutely love him because they know they can ask him to do anything to do with the community and such and get videos of it, and he'll do it in a heartbeat and, you know, do it like he means it. So from that point of view, they must absolutely love him. And we love him for that as well. But also, on the pitch, he has gone from absolute strength to strength, from being in a position where he struggled to really have too much of a role in the squad at certain points, to finding his position, if you like, at right wing back, to having the fans fall in love with him and him falling in love back with the fans, to then now be one of, if not the first name on the team sheet, to be playing as many minutes as he is doing, and to the fact that people would quite happily see him sign a lifetime contract. The way that he plays, the way that he's able to suit that role perfectly with his attacking intent, his willingness to run, but also his ability defensively. Like, I felt recently the only time where I really felt that he struggled defensively was against Nicky Cadden in the first half against Barnsley. That's it. And the fact I can pick that out because it's so sort of uncommon, it's fantastic. What, for me, what Lars Sorensen's ability on that right side does is it symbolises perfectly what we've done under Michael Skubala. We've increased our attacking intent without it being a deficit to our defensive intent. That is a perfect symbolisation of what Lars Sorensen is doing in this wider Lincoln City team.
Absolutely. And it's backed up by the stats, which is always nice.
Talk us through them then, Chris.
Yeah, well, it's just there's a few bits and bobs here, but particularly on Lass. So I know you and Gaz mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, or maybe even last week. There's a really useful metric on Y-Scout that we use, our kind of the scouting platform that we subscribe to get all of our data. And there's loads and loads of data for every part of the pitch, every player, every team, loads of stuff, loads of metrics. But they also have an index, which is basically just best player in certain positions, and it basically weights all the metrics. So some attack, you know, for defenders, for example, for what Lass is a lateral defender, so that is all left backs, all left wing backs, all right backs, and all right wing backs. So basically all those kind of outside defenders all lumped together of every single one in League One, and it ranks them in terms of all the metrics that take into consideration, and then it has like an objective best. And Y-Scout links lists the top 30 players in each of those kind of roles on the pitch. Lars Sorensen is third in that list overall, behind Harrison Burrows at Peterborough and Luke Leahy as well. Luke Leahy's actually played more games at central midfield than as a lateral defender, though, so I think you can discount that a little bit. But also really worth pointing out is that they're both left-sided lateral defenders. Lars Sorensen is the best right-sided defender in League One, statistically speaking, by any metric that you use that combines a combination of metrics rather than just picks one at a time. He is number one. And that is a huge, huge, huge credit to him, credit to the coaching team, but obviously just a real asset for the club, as you mentioned. Also, Lucas Jensen is now number one in terms of goalkeeping in the whole league. So we have the best goalkeeper and the best right-sided defender in the whole league by a number of metrics, which is brilliant. Other players that feature in their respective positions on the lists is Rico Hackett, Danny Mandroyu, Ethan Arahan, and then Pordy O'Connor, Adam Jackson, and Alex Mitchell. They all appear in those top 30 players in their respective roles on the pitch. Actually, most of them are within that kind of mid-table sort of 10 to 15 mark. But ultimately, they're all in the top 30, which is brilliant to have that many players that are recognised as the best. So many in their position is superb. But the ones obviously really standing out is Lucas and Lass, our two superstar Danes, number one in their respective positions on the pitch, which is just fantastic.
The thing is, we can sit here and look at stats. And that index, for the record, for something like goalkeepers, I think is brilliant. I think there's, when you start getting some of the midfield positions, I think it becomes a little bit questionable because the way it ranks defensive midfielders, central midfielders, and attacking midfield, it obviously uses different weighting of the metrics. I think sometimes things can get a little bit lost in there. But when you look at a goalkeeper and a right-sided defender, and we're able to say that we're up there as one of the best in those positions, and we've got other players in and around the squad that are in obviously different sort of levels of the index up and down the pitch, but we can tell that. I'm on like a few League One banter pages and things like that on Facebook, and obviously you scroll through Twitter and things like that. And last night there was a Portsmouth fan on one of the League One pages that kind of predicted their running. And I think they had their game against Lincoln as a win on the last day. And obviously they were predicting their whole running, but that just one of the results being the Lincoln win. And so many of the comments were from other teams' fans saying, "Oh, I wouldn't be counting on a win against Lincoln. Don't look like you'll be able to beat Lincoln. The way Lincoln are playing right now, no one's going to want to go there." And I'm sort of thinking, we don't even have to say it because it's the recognition from everybody else. And of course, it's hard not to miss a Lincoln City side who have scored 16 goals in 3 games. But the amount of praise, I mean, I saw Leeds fans saying, for example, why didn't we just keep hold of Skubala when we got rid of Jesse Marsh? And it's so nice to hear from sort of outsiders just how good we're doing. And we are doing so great. But going kind of back to the game, because, I mean, we are closing in on 50 minutes.
We've still got so much to talk about.
We've still got a goal, a penalty shootout, a penalty and a red card. So let's start with a penalty because that did chronologically happen next. Now, Chris, I think we've got a very slight differing view on this. I'm gonna say mine first because mine will be the unpopular one. And I think it's pretty obvious for regular listeners, but I'm not exactly the best judge as to whether or not, as to whether or not something happened and could easily have been seen and all of that. But I watched back the extended highlights yesterday, this morning, and I'm zooming in and I'm slow motion on the penalty. Now, in real time yesterday, thought it was a fine tackle and all of that, but a lot of that was from the sort of audio descriptive commentator, so I couldn't really see it from where it was. But when I'm watching it back in slow-mo, I could not tell whether or not the ball was got, shall we say. It was Sean Rowan, wasn't it? I couldn't tell whether or not he won the ball. So I have a little bit of sympathy for the ref. But I understand that's an unpopular opinion. And like I say, other people are better judges than that than me. So, Chris, why don't you talk us through what you saw? Because that's probably more.
In my opinion, it's not a penalty in a million years. And I think the reaction of everyone around the stadium, the players on the pitch on both sides, highlights that was an incorrect decision. I just think it's a really good tackle. And sometimes you think, oh, it's a great tackle. That should never be given. And the one that surfaced recently was Barry Fuller for Dorking. When he goes right through, I think it's Luke Berry. It's called one of the Chesterfield players anyway. And it was a 90s tackle, if you like. Like he takes ball, but man, and he really gives him something. One of those that you think, if that's in the Premier, probably gets to get a card. But we all love that sort of tackle. It wasn't that. It wasn't like one of those kind of old school tackles. It was, in my opinion, both in the game and watching it back as well, it's a brilliantly timed challenge. He's not taking the man before the ball at all. He's got all ball. Player doesn't even appeal. There was one player down the other side, stood in the penalty spot with his arms up. What I'm actually thinking, he's got his arms up because he wanted him to pass his mate to pass in the ball rather than take an extra touch. I think he was remonstrating at his teammate. No other Bristol Rovers players were appealing for it. No one in the ground expected a penalty to be given in that moment. And it was just a really incorrect decision. Obviously, thankfully, it wasn't a particularly important part of the game. Even if they'd scored it, it would have been 4-1. I think we could all be pretty comfortable seeing that out from that point. But then they rather hilariously skied it over the bar and then kind of karma kind of sorted it all out. Parity was restored, or everything was kind of set back to as it should be. But one thing did make me chuckle, which was Sean Rowan's reaction to the referee after the penalty was missed. He went very John Cena-esque. I deserve to get a card for it. So, you know, was it maybe silly and unnecessary? Yeah, probably, for being harsh. But it was also undeniably very funny.
Yes.
Really, really funny.
Quite frankly, who cares if he got a yellow card for it? Because it's just things like that that he's clearly enjoying himself. And he was obviously pissed off and all that when the ref gave the penalty. And to then react like that, it's things you actually quite like to see. And there's another, and we'll go to it now because I can't actually remember whether this was before or after the fifth goal. But Alex Mitchell, later on, deciding that when he'd won a free kick, sort of gone down, won a free kick or whatever it was, and was face down on the floor, for those that didn't see, and just started doing a couple of press-ups in front of the away fans before getting back up.
Yeah, I loved it.
Now, it's just little things like that that are top-level owsery. You know, it was just absolutely incredible when you're having that. And this is what I'm talking about, confidence and all of this. But and there is a big but here. Confidence could end up being a little bit lower going into the Leighton Orient game, Chris. And tell us why.
Well, we're going to be without Mr. Irahon, who I think has been just outstanding for us. Absolutely outstanding. A class above. He is so much better than League One, isn't he? He's so much better than League One. But he got himself a red card yesterday. A second yellow on 76 minutes. And it was a yellow card. It was a challenge he had to make. Bristol Rovers player got there just ahead of him, and it was a foul. It wasn't a cynical foul, it wasn't an aggressive foul, but it was a foul in a dangerous area of the pitch. It was a yellow card. It shouldn't have mattered, because if he wasn't on a yellow card already, you accept that and it's all fine. But it makes that discussion we had earlier about his booking at the end of the first half, it then makes that more significant, doesn't it? Because I think he's managed himself through the game really well until that point. Certainly the second half, up until that point, hasn't really got himself engaged in any real tight decisions in that regard. And I think that's probably the reason that Michael Scavola left him on the pitch, even though we were looking comfortable, was because you kind of trust him to manage that. But it was a challenge he had to make. He couldn't not make that challenge. You know, you can't let a player just run past him in that situation. Is he got a card? That just makes that less than needed yellow card in the first half a bit more significant then, which makes it kind of, in retrospect, people to look back and think, oh, it was really silly. But I don't, like I said, as we said earlier, it maybe was unnecessary, but I think I still think he can find himself unlucky at the end of the first half, getting a yellow for that. But yeah, honestly, no complaints about the second yellow. So yeah, we're going to be without him for the Leighton Orient game, which is going to be a big loss. And, you know, we mentioned how well certain players have come in and impressed in certain positions. Moylan and Amanjoya have been prime examples of that. You know, they've really came into positions that I don't think anyone really expects them to thrive in, and they have both absolutely thrived. But for me, I think Ethan Irahon is irreplaceable in terms of the job he does, in terms of the run-in. Because we've been praising the team in terms of, well, they've had so-and-so's come in and replaced so-and-so. They've done well. They've deserved to keep their name on the team sheet. Mentioned the centre-backs. Mentioned Mandroy, currently keeping Ted out of the team at the moment. I personally expect Ted to fill in and do Irahon's role against Leighton Orient, but I only expect that to happen for one game, because I think Irahon is a cut above, and I think he is almost irreplaceable. No matter how well anyone else plays in his position, I think he comes straight back into the team after his suspension. But yeah, that probably did just put a little bit of a downer on the bigger picture, the immediate bigger picture, if you like, for the next game or so. But it obviously didn't really affect this game itself. And actually, from that point, I felt we just managed the game really well. And not at any point, albeit, of course, we were already 4-0 up, so Bristol Rovers already knew the game was dead and buried. But not at any point did I feel that we were a man down. We didn't look like we had a man down at any point. Then, of course, we go and score another goal with 10 men to make it 5-0. Rico Hackett, finishing off the route to make it 5. And yeah, we all go home happy at that point. But yeah, there's no denying that, as good as everything is at the moment, that there is maybe just the small downside of that with tarnishing the result itself with Irahon's red. But I think that will become more significant as we lead into the next game, as it becomes closer and we start to discuss that in more depth. I think we might discuss his absence has been a genuine challenge. I think we'll be okay for one game, but there's no denying it makes it harder for us.
Agreed. It does. But then on the flip side of that, if we beat Leighton Orient at home without Ethan Aaron, suddenly any chances of any hopes, any whatever you want to call it, of finishing in the top six at the end of this season are increased exponentially. Because if we can do that, whew, God, that's big. But I want to touch on that last goal, actually, Rico's goal, because listening to the commentary of it yesterday, there was a comment that it was quite lucky. And, you know, you could say that there was a deflection and for him to be able to keep hold of the ball in the middle, sure. But for me, it was a perfect example of the confidence the lads are playing with at the minute. Because he's got the ball, like it was a sort of a pass stroke clearance, you know, it was more of a pass, but pass up field. He's got the ball on the left flank and he's thinking, do you know what? Come on then. Let's have a little bit of a run at the guy. So he brings the ball inside onto his weaker foot, something he's done before against Burton, for example, away from home. But he brings the ball inside onto his weaker foot, takes two men out basically, keeps hold of the ball. Okay, maybe the bounce got in a little bit lucky, but if still he's charging down the loose ball, gets the shot away again on his weaker foot. Yeah, the deflection helps it get in, but probably would have still gone in without the deflection. Who knows 100%? But like I say, for me, again, it just shows and is the perfect example of the confidence that's being played with. And you can see that through every single player at the minute. Jack Moylan, we've hardly mentioned in this podcast, but he was, again, absolutely outstanding yesterday at being involved in more or less everything. The way that him and the others are able to move the ball forward so quickly and so fluently, oh, it's outstanding. So, yeah, huge credit for that. And then that was basically it. Game wrapped up. 5-0. I mean, the game was wrapped up after 11 minutes, realistically, because we're not conceding, really, at the minute. And let's just talk about some of the headline stats. I mean, 30, you'll have heard all of these before, but 13 games have beaten. 8 wins in our last 10. 6 clean sheets in our last 7.
It's mental.
6 wins in our last 7 as well. The other one being a draw. 16 goals in the last 3 games, 26 goals in the last 10 games, 3 goals conceded in the last 10 games. I mean,
just 4 goals conceded in 13.
Exactly. I mean, I remarked in the write-up today, and I'm just going to repeat it here. I'm finding it very difficult at the minute to talk about Lincoln City because we sat here talking about obviously how great it is. And I just want to stop and just start smiling. And I lose all kind of sense of objective analysis because you just want to go, we're good.
But you know what? Like that sounds silly, but it's not because we are.
Yeah.
It's not like against Shrewsbury, we were good, but we're against a poor team.
Mm.
But what we've been for a long time now is genuinely good. At both parts of the game, going forward and defensively and everything in between. Like we are a pretty complete team at the moment. And it's not that we're just beating teams that are poor. You know, we are objectively good. You know, in terms of the last few games, we are the best team in the league in terms of points return. 10 games ago, we were 14 points away from the playoffs. None of us really even considered it as an option, did we? None. And our goal difference was 0. This is a real significant one. Goal difference was 0. Now, of course, we all know we're just 2 points away from the playoffs now. But our goal difference is now plus 23. A plus 23 goal difference in 10 games. Now, that might become significant between now and the end of the season. Maybe it will go down to goal difference. So just to give you a heads up of kind of what our rivals are, because let's be honest, we're all fighting for that last playoff spot. We ain't catching Barnsley. Not a chance, in my opinion, Mike. That's too far away. I know we said that about these. But, you know, let's be realistic. We're vying for that last playoff spot. Oxford currently occupy it. They have currently got a plus 10 goal difference. Stevenage, you've got a plus 11. Blackpool have got a plus 15. Leighton Orient, probably a little bit far away, but they're going to still think they've got a chance. Their goal difference is currently zero. And now it's plus 23. Like, it's worth an extra point. It is. It's worth an extra point when it comes down to separating teams like that. And that's huge. And I don't know whether that was by luck, not by luck, but whether it was by design to not just win these games by playing well, whether the aim was to score goals and like plenty of goals to try and get the goal difference up. You know, I imagine the 3 points is the most important thing. But the thing is now, teams are going to be terrified of us. Mm. Teams are going to be absolutely terrified to play against us at the moment. And they should be. We should be. We're good. We're really, really good. And the thing is now, if that means a team comes against us and wants to play 10 men behind the ball, low block, fine. I've got every confidence we'll be able to break them down. Whereas that was not the case previously. That was always a weakness of ours. I have utmost confidence. If we can force a team that wants that would normally want to have a bit of the ball to sit off us and to say, come and beat us then, I think, all right, we'll go and beat you then. Like that's how confident I am, because I think the intensity that we play with teams at this level, unless you're on it, you can't deal with it. Stevenage matched the intensity. They're not as good at football as we are. I think technically they're not as good at us, but there's no denying that they matched our intensity and the game was 0-0. Every other game we've won, the teams just couldn't live with our intensity at all. And like we said, and it's not just it's intensity from the start, right from that very first whistle, the amount of early goals we've scored. It's just a really nice time to be a Lincoln City fan at the moment. But we're going to have to wait 2 weeks. We're going to have to wait 2 whole weeks for another game.
We will. But don't have to wait 2 more weeks for another podcast, because there will be one on Thursday and there will be one next Sunday as well. I am assuming it will be Thursday and Sunday. But we've got a couple of rather special things lined up. Don't want to tease anything too soon. But all I will say is I've got a phone call with somebody at the club either later on today or tomorrow morning to discuss a certain something that we're hoping to get out next weekend. There is also another thing in the pipeline. I mean, those of you maybe a little bit eagle-eyed, you'll remember, shall we say, what we did during one of the previous international breaks. That's right, loan watch. That is hopefully going to be returning this weekend. And as I said, there's going to be something else we've got working in the pipeline. But don't let it tease that until we're 100% certain. But keep an eye out on social media. It's a good time to be a Lincoln fan right now, isn't it, Chris? It's a good time to be talking everything Lincoln. It's a good time to be talking about some of our loan players. They're doing very well. Hakeem Adeleke and contract extension? Oh, who knows? but...
You know, on Hacks, by the way, I'm delighted. And there's not a chance he's going to be a Lincoln City player next season.
No,
I'm just really pleased for him. I'm really pleased for him that he's found a home and he's thriving, and fair play.
I'm actually hoping to do Doncaster versus Wrexham on 2nd of April, day after Easter Monday, to go and watch their game on the Tuesday night. Because for that, I just want to go see Hacks, bless him. So, that was a really enjoyable podcast, wasn't it, Chris? As ever, because we're winning and it's so easy to talk about, but it's also so difficult to try and do objective analysis. But we're good.
Yeah, it's difficult not to get carried away. You know, we've been chasing for the last few weeks, haven't we? We've been chasing this playoff pack. I don't even think we're chasing anymore. It's not completely in our hands yet, but we're part of it now. We're part of it. We're not chasing to be part of it. We are now there. We've now got to stay there. With that, of course, comes more pressure and arguably expectation rather than hope. Mm. And that adds, of course, to it. And yeah, you know, to put a bit of realism into it at the moment, 2 weeks of that again, you know, when you're on fire, you want to play. You want to play on Tuesday now, then you want to play Saturday. We've got 2 weeks now. But again, that's 2 weeks to get players back fit, two more weeks on the training ground. And potentially 2 weeks for some of our rivals that have got games coming up to drop points. Mm. So, yeah, let's just enjoy the ride. Let's just enjoy the ride, because, my God, I wasn't expecting this. I expected us to improve. I did not expect us to have a genuinely realistic chance of playoffs. And what the lads have done in the last few weeks is absolutely remarkable. And whether we get there or not, they deserve just immense credit for where they are, find themselves now. But I'm going to say it. I reckon I'll see it at Wembley. When you get to Wembley, it's a lottery. I reckon we're off to Wembley, lads and ladies.
Yeah. It's funny, though, because we are very much writing off semi-finals as though we're all... Because everybody's just talking about Wembley. But no, I 100% agree. Look, we are going to enjoy the rest of this season, no matter what. And you know what? I said it a few weeks back. I'm going to say it again. struggling to see where the next loss is coming from. Let's hope that that isn't Leighton Orient. It definitely won't be Carlisle.
Oh, don't say that, my God. Don't say it out loud.
No, it's fine. It's absolutely fine. We're not going to lose to Carlisle. And this is going to be my final end if that does come true. So thank you all so much for watching. It's been a pleasure. Up the Imps.
Up the Imps.
So 90th minute and all your mates around watching the Imps on iFollow. You've got your McNugget share boxes on the go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, but then you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.